Sheffield Live. Made in Sheffield, made by you.
Every Sunday morning at 9, join me, Pete Evans, for Spinning Jazz on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM. Each week we'll be exploring the wonderful world of modern jazz. From hard bop to bossa nova, from Latin to soul. That's Spinning Jazz, Sunday mornings at 9 on Sheffield Live.
If you like rock in all its forms, you will love Glory Days. You can listen to us locally on 93.2 FM and on the telly, and anywhere in the world on sheffieldlive.org. What do you think, Dawn? You know what? I think he likes it. That's Glory Days, every Monday 1 till 3 here on Sheffield Live. Bosh, bosh. Oops, I've had an accident.
Hello, I'm Harry Wilburn. I present Steel & Wire every Wednesday, 10 a.m. Americana, bluegrass, American roots, and more. Lots more. Lots of guests, lots of local music and musicians. That's Steel & Wire, Wednesday, 10 a.m.
You're listening to fabulous Harry Wilburn on Steel & Wire.
It's time to open the music box. Join me, Steve Roden, every Thursday morning between 10 and 12 for music from the 40s to the 90s from my own music collection. Songs I've grown up with, ones I am sure you will enjoy hearing again. Hope to see you then.
If you love new music and you want to discover the best new artists out there, then tune into The Backroom with me, Paddy. I'll be playing the best of new indie, electro, EDM and punk and showcasing new Sheffield talent. Also music news, local and national gig guide and new album releases. So tune into The Backroom every Thursday night between 6 and 7 p.m. here on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM.
This is Sheffield Live.
Hello, you're listening to The Film Show on Sheffield Live, 93.2 FM, with me, Martin.
And me, Denise.
Hello.
Good afternoon.
It's December, so we can start talking about Christmas.
Yes.
Yes. We can play Christmas music, talk about Christmas films.
Or we can go to Jamaica.
We could.
Yeah.
Which we may well do later on. For a Lee Scratch Perry Christmas mix or something. Anyway, more of that later. News.
This is the news.
And we're getting to that time of year now where all we're going to be here is, oh, what's going to win the Oscar next year? Well, you know what? I don't bloody care right now. But one of the things which is supposed to be one of the signposts,
yes,
of what might
an
be,
early indicator.
An early indication. this week was the New York Film Critics Circle list of best ofs. And their best film of 2025 was One Battle After Another. And it may have a pretty good chance because there ain't been much this year. So.
Well,
But we'll get on to that next week.
I'll say the S word.
Yeah. Yeah. So, again, that's given a bit of a oomph to Paul Thomas Anderson's epic from earlier this year. Other news is, well, you may be getting a feeling of deja vu from this particular item. Michael Caine has retired again.
I thought, right, okay.
Apparently, this is now the fourth time that he has announced his retirement.
Is he retiring from retiring?
I think he's, yeah. You'll be surprised why he's coming back as well when I get to it. Apparently, he first retired in 2009. After Harry Brown, that great film where to get rid of all this country's ills, you arm pensioners. And as now being a pensioner, I can go and get my Glock whenever I want to, so long as I present a bus pass for it.
I'm not sure that's a wise...
It might not be. He then returned for something called Medieval. As a Czech historical drama, and he started as the Great Escaper as a D-Day veteran, and that was, I think that might have been 2 years ago. He's coming out of retirement, I think, to go back into retirement now, as he's going to be working on a Vin Diesel film. I don't know whether him and Vin are going to go mano a mano on this, but it's a sequel to some film that they made God knows how many years ago. But he was at in Saudi Arabia for the Red Sea Film Festival this week, probably picking up a nice little earner for that as well, and announced yet again that he's retiring. So farewell for now, Sir Michael.
We'll see. Good for him.
Yes, yeah. But not for us.
What's next?
Haven't you got this schedule?
Well, I've got a
hours,
blank
weeks
I've got a
I spent.
Blank, you know, page in front of me. My computer's.
Tinseltown.
No. Oh.
Don't all me about this.
Well, it's Christmas. It's Christmas, and Knaresborough, in our neighbouring area of Yorkshire, hosted a public premiere of the film. So it had its premiere, I think, in London's
Leicester
Square.
What is Tinseltown?
Tinseltown is it features Kiefer Sutherland and Rebel Wilson. Kiefer Sutherland is a struggling American actor who decides that he's going to revive his fortunes by doing serious theatre in England.
Yes.
What he doesn't realise is that he's been booked to work in panto. And panto is a shock for... I've seen people working in panto and they don't quite realise how many hours of madness it is.
Yep.
Sometimes three shows a day. Madness. And it's a very peculiar, peculiarly British thing.
I don't suppose anything specifically American that you could immediately, you know, compare it to. Well, not something that, you know, everyone in all of America would see as... Ah, yeah.
Well, Knaresborough's been getting very excited about it because they feature as the location in the film. It's a Sky Cinema business. And I think one of the local theatre group were like, we could just ask if we could... I think they did a LinkedIn message to Sky Productions and went, can we shoot it here first?
I mean, there's
about 120 seats in this.
But the killer would be if Kiefer's going to turn up. That's
I think it's been and done. Yeah, it's not. Been there yet.
Oh,
no.
Look at that. We had 24 hours to do that, didn't they? You know?
Yeah, I'm not entirely sure that you'll be able to watch Tinseltown. It might be too much for you with what you've been doing this week.
I am suffering trauma at the moment. More of that
but
later.
But it's a nice little story for regional theatre in Knaresborough.
Yeah. Thank God. I hope they're not making Tinseltown 2. The revenge.
Well, there's a little BBC story about it where one of the guys in the venue is saying at the screening, there was a moment where some people run down a street to escape from somebody and they run into what everybody watching knows is a dead end. Because, you know, in locations, you'll just get the best locations. And that gets a massive laugh for Knaresborough, which we probably will miss the subtlety of that.
We'd have sat there stony-faced. the showroom are kicking off a rather worthwhile little scheme, something called Cinema Angels. Yeah. And I very much support this. This is where you can contribute the cost of a cinema ticket. That would then be allocated to a wide variety of people, children, pensioners.
And it's organised by their partner organisations to get, you know, young people and people that don't normally get the experience. And it's specifically to come and see Christmas films in the Christmas period. Yeah.
Yeah. That's really good. So you can donate £10 for one ticket, up to £40 for like a family ticket. And I think there's one for £100 for you can get an organisation or a group.
Yeah, or you can do £300 for a whole classroom as well. Can you imagine? But that's just a really nice Christmas thing to do. So if you want to give the gift of cinema to somebody who wouldn't necessarily get
that,
you
can take a whole junior school class to Die Hard. There you go.
I'm pretty sure they will enforce the age restriction.
It's Christmas. Kids love it.
That's a nice one. Good on you, the showroom. I hope that goes well.
Right then. Only one.
But it's a big one, isn't it?
What they say.
Absolute literary giant that is Tom Stoppard died earlier this week at the age of 88. Known primarily as a playwright, but massive in the film world as well.
I was surprised how many scripts he'd done.
Yeah, and some of them not credited either. Yeah. He just did magic on them. His family moved from Czechoslovakia when he was very young, as the Nazis were arriving. I think they fled to Singapore, which was not a great move, and then they ended up in India. So he had this kind of moving around childhood. He didn't actually know he was of Jewish descent until later on in his life as well, in the 90s, I think, when his mother was poorly or had died.
Really?
Film-wise, though, in his career, he directed a film that I absolutely loved and came out in 1990, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, which is based on his own play from one of his first successful plays, which was, I think, 1968 or late 60s.
It was, mid-60s, wasn't it?
But interestingly as well, he wasn't one of, you would look at his career and the weight of it and think he was one of the Oxbridge lot. He never went to university. He trained as a journalist, then as a drama critic, and then got into playwriting. And so he must have learned by reading and writing, and he was always reading. But film-wise as well, Empire of the Sun, he was the script on that. He also reshaped Brazil for Terry Gilliam. Yeah. So Terry Gilliam describes... In fact, there's some lovely pieces in The Guardian this week about people talking about their relationship with, like, Joe Wright, the filmmaker Joe Wright, John Borman. But Terry Gilliam mentions in his piece how basically he just reshaped Brazil and made it
he
a story.
Said something like, you know, I gave him this huge piece of rock and he carved it into Michelangelo's Statue of David.
Never want to under exaggerate.
Terry, that's why your films always go over budget, mate.
But there's some really nice pieces about him. And he was, if you get the chance as well to listen again to Radio 4's Front Row piece, they do a whole show on Monday earlier this week looking back at his life. And there's some really, really interesting information on there about him as well. Obviously, well respected and well loved, and just a huge loss to theatre.
And, of course, he won the Academy Award for
Shakespeare in Love. And I think sometimes Shakespeare in Love gets a bit of a bad rap because of its association with Miramax and its promotion to get the Oscars. Yeah. And Gwyneth Paltrow hasn't necessarily survived as a great actress, if you know what I mean. She's more sort of... But I loved that film and I really enjoy it, and it's really witty. And that's what he was so good at as well, just putting this wit and making the personal a part of the political as well. And, you know, a big loss.
Yeah. Do you want a tissue?
No.
Okay. We'll move along then to Trailer Trash.
Oh, what have you given us this week?
Just two for you, which are going to be opening early in the new year. When we get our cinemas back from
Christmas and
Wicked
for good.
First off, good luck, have fun, don't die.
Now, I thought this was going to be what was the George Clooney one about the radio that was black and white?
Good luck and good night.
Yeah, I keep thinking it's that, and it's not that at all.
I just let her go off on these little tangents. Yes, that's the one, Denise.
It looks, but it's, what's his name?
Sam Rockwell.
Yeah, he's good in everything, isn't he? Will he even be good in this AI-looking AI monster madness?
I said to you, the visuals of it reminded me of that. Everywhere.
Everywhere, everything everywhere all at once.
All the time,
All the time.
All the time. All the time. But it looks mad and it's going to be chucking something at you every 15 seconds.
The premise is Sam Rockwell appears from the future, warning us all about the dangers of AI, I think, in a nutshell.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he comes from a bit of a hellscape future. But it looks fun. Sam Rockwell can really make something better than some of its parts sometimes.
I've seen him in some.
Yeah, but you've seen him in stuff that you might have been ropey that
he can be good. He can be good. But if you want to know what really good
is. Oh, gosh.
Surefire, guaranteed 100% banger of a movie.
Shelter.
The new Jason Statham epic in which he plays an ex-Special Forces agent who is trying to live a quiet life.
Not just an ex, but the first and the best.
And a precision killing machine.
Yeah. Don't forget.
Whose quiet life on a remote Scottish island is interrupted by a small child that he has to rescue.
Why is the small child delivering?
I'm not going to give away the entire plot of this movie to you.
Just because the trailer does.
And before he knows it, even though he thought he was out, he's pulled back in. And his arch nemesis seems to be in this, Bill Nighy.
Oh. Does he do everything from a desk in this, Bill Nighy?
He's like, it looks like it.
I'll do this film, but I'm not leaving the studio.
Can
and I just want to be in an
on
office.
This one? Yeah, it's all right, Bill. Phone it in. So that's Shelter. That's very early into 2026. And you're all going to need a palate cleanser after Wicked for Good.
There's a lot of deaths just in the trailer, so I dread to think
it
how many.
It explodes into
in the
mayhem, doesn't it?
Yeah.
So I'm there for that.
Have fun with the body count on that one.
There you go. So, music, maestro.
Oh,
please.
Yes. Well, we, remembering Jimmy Cliff last week, we played something from Harder They Come, and we were both just. It's such a good soundtrack. We're going to pick four more tracks from it.
Yeah. And we don't play much reggae,
no.
Do we? I'm honest. There aren't that many films that have used reggae, let's say, as extensively as this.
So let's go for the original and the best.
Okay. So we're going to kick off with our first track, and it is Mr. Jimmy Cliff, and is You Can Get It If You Really Want It.
But you must try.
And try.
You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. But you must try, try and try, try and try. You'll succeed at last. Persecution you must fear. Win and lose, you've got to get your share. Your mind set on a dream. You can get it, no harder it may seem now. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. But you must try, try and try, try and try. You'll succeed at will come your way, but the hotter the battle you see, it's the sweeter the victory. Now you can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. You can get it if you really want. But you must try, try and try, try and try. You'll succeed at last. You can
Mr. Jimmy Cliff there, and you can get it if you really want from the soundtrack of...
How Do They Come?
There you go. So what did I do this week?
I can't believe you did this, but I'm so glad it was you, not me.
A multitude of reasons. I couldn't get to the cinema to see any new films, and I can't say I was really that bothered about that. Now, if you remember last year, I took a bullet for the show because I sat through Hot Frosty last year.
But it was a genre unfamiliar to you at the time.
So I was looking at Netflix, Amazon streaming Christmas films, and they are a genre to themselves.
That Hallmark tradition,
You know, and Hot Frosty was about a snowman who comes to life and he has his magic scarf put around him, I think, and he falls in love with this woman in this town where it seems to be snowing all year round, and it was... As I say, I'm sorry I remember so much about it now. And, of course, the big thing was, it's Christmas, it's all right outside, but if he goes into a room, it's going to be really, really warm. Also, he can't be walking around buck naked as a snowman. So, give me a break. Anyway, that one still keeps me awake at night. So I thought what I'd do is look at this year's offerings of... So I looked at three...
Torture yourself again.
Three new ones, and I had a stiff drink... Went to bed, come back and told myself, yeah, today you've got to do this. Right. So I've looked through three. If you've seen any of these, please interject. So the first horror that I put myself through was Oh, What Fun, which I thought, well, maybe it can't be that bad. It's got Michelle Pfeiffer in. And I like Michelle Pfeiffer.
I love Michelle Pfeiffer.
And I just think, surely she would have some self-respect, some dignity. But she hasn't.
Catwoman, Michelle Pfeiffer?
Catwoman. Now, that's a Christmas film as well, isn't it? But I mean, it's a great... That's more of that next week. Anyway, so this is about family get-together. So many of them are about family get-togethers in these huge detached houses where it's already snowed. And everyone's gathering for Christmas and, you know, there's these mountains of food.
If I'm right, the lead up to Christmas does take a long time. You don't just turn up on Christmas Eve in these
it
films,
seems
do
to,
you?
Because they do
for a
stuff
week.
On Christmas Eve, yeah. Don't they?
Although I believe Americans don't get holiday that much, so no. I don't know why they're all free
to they don't
go
do
home.
Boxing Day, do they? I think they're all back to work on what we would regard as Boxing Day. So pays your money, it takes your choice, I think. So this is... the story of the film is Michelle Pfeiffer as the mother does everything for everyone. She does all the cooking, all the organising.
She's had enough of that, right?
And she's getting to... There's one thing she wants, to go along to this dance thing. And all of the family
forget
like to book...
You'd lost the will to live by then.
Believe me, it's been a hard week, this. I've been drinking a lot as well. No one in the family remembers to book her a ticket for... Oh, no... Sorry, they do book her a ticket, but in the melee before they all set off, they forget to take her.
So far, so Home Alone.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. You know, they're cherry-picking bits here. She says she's had enough and she goes on this road trip to the studio where they do this show live on telly, where she appears on there and she becomes a national sensation. She goes viral.
What, for slagging off her family?
No, for... Dancing like she's...
Oh, yeah. Dance like no one's watching when everyone's watching. Oh, great. Okay.
Everyone's watching. And so there are all different sort of family arguments. And Dennis Leary, who's in it, who looks as though he's been Botoxed.
Oh, I remember when he was funny briefly
was
in the 90s.
Yeah, a long time ago.
Yeah,
though, a very long time ago. Yeah. He's got J.D. Vance eyeliner and his face is so smooth, it's worrying. Tiffany Jones is in there somewhere. The saddest thing was there's Joan Chen is in it.
Oh.
As this very annoying Chinese...
What, the lovely Twin Peaks
neighbour. 35 years ago, was she the most beautiful woman in the world, the most enigmatic woman in the world, as Josie Packard in Twin Peaks... I know she ended up trapped inside a doorknob, but
that's what you get in a David Lynch.
Exactly. Yeah. But she's been like reduced to this You know, that horrible...
I mean, it's better than being reduced to a doorknob, isn't
well,
it?
Well, I wasn't sure about it at the end.
Oh, dear.
See, those horrible so, dragon lady stereotype, you know.
So, oh, what fun, not
oh, what fun.
Fun,
most definitely was not.
No, okay.
So...
moving on to the hypes of...
Moving on to the... I thought, I can't do another family film just yet. So, the other one that was getting a lot of... was Jingle Bell Heist.
This looked... I couldn't... No, did you watch all of this?
Well, I only got halfway through this.
I'm so relieved, because I couldn't even get past the trailer.
This, it had a couple of people in it who I have never heard of. And I know I'm not as up at all these young stars as what I used to be, but it's about two people, one of whom seems to be a petty criminal working in a department store stealing goods, and another one who's someone who's like a IT whatever, you know, who is scamming them on scamming this department store online. And Olivia Holt was the female lead, and someone called Connor Swindells was the a name to forget, I would say that is it. Lucy Punch was in it apparently, but I didn't even get to where Lucy Punch appeared. I fell asleep halfway through. It was awful. I have never seen such an un-Christmassy film since Last Christmas.
Even though everyone's dressed as Father Christmas.
It's one of those, but there's no reason for it. You know, it's. I'd always thought that Last Christmas was the most blandest, you know, non-Christmassy Christmas
but
film.
But this found you longing for Last Christmas.
I was almost wanting it to be Last Christmas again, so that I could warm the cockles of my heart.
But it's an American film, isn't it? But it's set
it's in this, you know, Love Actually type of London.
This weird sort of London.
I think a lot of it was shot in London. Not in anywhere you would recognise.
No. But Peter Serafinovich is in it, isn't it?
Big deal.
I used to like him.
He's not very good. He should stick to the political commentary, I think. So, I can't say I saw this through to the end. It was desperate. And... Olivia and Connor had absolutely zero chemistry.
That's the thing with these. You've got to have...
You've got to have something you think, I can believe in this.
Yeah, you've got to have something with a bit of go
yeah,
about it.
Yeah. And hence, I didn't care seeing if they got the... And apparently I was reading reviews, says, yeah, they get together at the end. And I don't care if I'm spoiling it for you. I'm saving you time.
Oh, come on. You all know. Which
and
everyone
actually,
knows that.
But there's actually no reason for them to get together at the end. It's something they just pull in the last 5 minutes of the film. So, onwards and upwards, I thought. What can they throw at me next? Take over for a few minutes. Because you've part-watched one of these, haven't you?
I've watched... A Merry Little Xmas, and it's X as in EX hyphen MAS, because it's about family. Alicia Silverstone is, oh God, it's so bland, isn't it? I don't know if I can bother to... Alicia Silverstone and Oliver Hudson play a couple who have separated, but they want to have a Christmas together for their... ungrateful family. Now I've watched this. I'm reading this as this is what's in the film. I can't actually remember.
You've not had enough of those boozy
I've
weeks.
I've watched it less than a week ago, and it hasn't really. I've watched one more since, and it's yeah. wiped it from my memory.
I mean, at the moment, all of these films are melding into one inside my head. That's why I've handed over to you just to break the ice for me.
Well, Jamelia Jamal turns up as well as like the new girlfriend for Oliver Hudson's ex-husband. Obviously, they're going to get back together by the end, you know.
But the thing is, when it starts
I'm just
off...
I'm trying to remember what happens in it that makes it...
It starts off with them talking to an attorney about getting a divorce. And you think, well, there's no reason for these two people to get to divorce. Why don't you just sit down with each other, go for a nice meal, have a bottle of wine, you know, and get back to where you were. So the whole thing is so contrived that you don't believe it from word go, do you? That these two people who, in their own way, are sort of perfect for each other.
Yeah, and they've been together 30-odd years.
At least they're not going to spoil two other people's lives, are they, by staying together? There's some oiky British character called Nigel, who is a tour guide at Harry Potter.
Oh, God, I've completely forgotten about him. But he's her daughter's boyfriend, isn't he?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And there's lots of... Americans watching this, as most of them probably think, that, you know, we all live in the Harry Potter world. This is fulfilling it. The only good... There was one or two good gags. There was a couple of good George Clooney gags with Alicia Silverstone, because she was in the Batman movie with George Clooney, which is notorious as being the worst Batman movie.
Was. And
I thought, I wonder how many people get that. Because that's 30-odd years ago, you know.
There was, yeah. But
and
so,
I thought, well, someone remembers further back than last week.
If I remember rightly, the whole plot, though, of this is really is that he gets a new girlfriend who's English and a bit younger. So she gets... I don't know how... What's the meet cute for her and the young man?
She meets this guy.
Is it a Christmas tree seller? Because that's what it normally is.
He was dressed up as Father Christmas, and he sold Christmas trees. He drove
the
snow plow.
Oh, my Lord, that is such a trope of these films, is that the woman goes back
right
to a town.
But right from the start, these two have got... There's no reason for them to be in the same room together. So, again, there is no emotional drive to this, you know? You say, well, you want to go and live with him? Enjoy. I mean, the whole thing seems to be that she has given up her potential career as an architect to move to this small town where he is a doctor, and she believes she's wasted her life. Which you get to, well, why didn't they talk about this? Because he seems to know nothing about these desires of hers. And, she's like this great, she's great at mending things, at doing all this stuff with organic whatevers. And so at the end, she set up this great business, and he's still... And we've been put through this torture, absolute torture.
Oh, dear. I feel like I need to give a brief mention to a Netflix one as well.
Please put me out of my misery. I don't have to watch it.
Champagne Problems.
Oh, oui.
Now, this is soon to be a classic of the genre because it's not very good, but it has some good things in it and it has some good people in it. So Minka Kelly plays Sydney, who is the older sister. So she has a younger sister sibling, but they lost her mother when she was 13. So she is the responsible, career-minded, and the younger sister is begging her to, on this sudden trip she has to go to Paris to have a meeting about her conglomerate business taking over a champagne family business. One night, just you pinky promise swear, and that's the first time you vomit. You know, oh, well, grown women talking about pinky promises, for goodness sake. she pinky promise swears to have a night in Paris where she doesn't talk about work at all. She is sent by the concierge, and this is another American fantasy about Parisian hotels and concierges caring about them and loving them, possibly because when they do go to Paris, they're the only people in Paris that are nice to them,
yeah,
even a little bit. He sends her to this weird hidden bookshop. It's like a, you know, like a hidden cocktail joint, but it's for books. And she has the meet cute with the French man called Henri Cassel. He's played by Tom Wozniacki, who is a French actor. They have a meet cute. Unfortunately, he is a bit cardboardy. It's almost like he's too French and he doesn't quite understand what he's in because there's no sort of chemistry between them at all. But they fall in love. They have a one night stand, basically, because he says, I'm gonna show you the real Paris. But then he takes her up the Eiffel Tower or a Christmas market at the Eiffel Tower.
Sacre-cœur.
Gives her a crepe with chocolate on it. They go on a big wheel, have a kiss and have a one night stand. She realises she's late for an important meeting. She leaves while he's gone out to get a brekkie. And who should turn in at the important meeting than her one night stand? He is the son of the man whose business
she's
come. No, and they're having.
Out.
I know. Can you believe it? And they have a pitch He's having a pitch meeting with all four of the people who are going to be taking over his champagne business.
And
they're all caricatures and terrible. Like, one's a moody German with no sense of humour. One's a snobby French woman. And one is a billionaire American who just loves champagne and partying and who's there for the camp fun of it. Inexplicably, the beautiful Thibault de Montalbert, who is in Call My Agent, great French actor, big theatrical actor, who kind of saves this film for me, because he is, I've realised as well, I've got to the age now where it's men in their 60s that appeal to me, and this guy in his 30s/40s who's meant to be the love interest, inexplicably, or possibly because he's a lonely man who's only got a car to work on and staff at this big chateau, invites all of these caricatures to come and stay at his chateau. Skip to the end, they all get together and they spend Christmas next year together as well.
Please make it stop. Okay, well, I'll make thanks for that, because I'm going to avoid that one. Right, so I was in a desperate situation last night, so I had time to watch one more. So I watched something different. It's not a Netflix thing. It's a film from Finland, and I can hear you all at home groaning, oh, we only from Guatemala.
We do not need...
That's where he nearly...
Not another Fanny and Alexander.
So this is from... And it's an actual movie, and it's from 2017, and... Finn, I don't know what their sense of humour is, but it's weird.
Yeah.
So you have to go with a lot of this stuff, and sometimes you're not sure if you should be laughing or crying at this. I'll just read the Netflix thing. Helena's husband has gone off with a younger woman. Christmas is coming. Life is slow, and nothing is as it used to be. Helena is getting anxious about spending Christmas alone. Her best friend invites her to spend Christmas on a farm. The only place they can both afford. Okay, so they're out in the middle of nowhere in Finland with this family, mother, father, and a small child, and another guy who's staying there. They're sort of they're farming and they're doing like a holiday home sort of thing. And this film gets really, really strange. Maybe it's not strange if you finish, but what was so refreshing about it is it wasn't following all these tropes and stereotypical plot twists. And I don't want to say too much about it, because I really enjoyed this, and it really was. It was so refreshing to see a film that's about Christmas but isn't doing all the crap we've just talked about for the previous four films. And it has this really strange, weird, open ending. It stops, you think, what?
Oh.
But if you've been listening and watching carefully, I think you can take whether you want a happy or a sad ending from this. And I really, really liked that. And I'm not going to tell you what ending I thought it was either. Mind you, the mood I was in, I wanted them all to die, as you can imagine. That's not what happened. But it was just so refreshing to have a film about Christmas that wasn't playing the same old Christmas songs. If another film plays Christmas rapping, I'm going to reach for my gun. So there are some hints, some recommendations, and some warnings as to what you can watch on streaming.
I mean, it depends how much wine or Prosecco you've had.
It was a lot yesterday.
champagne problems. Sounds like the winner, and it's quite bad.
Sad news is I'll probably watch another one this afternoon. Right.
Merry Christmas. But we will do...
We
will come back to the Christmas film theme next week, but we're going to talk about more beloved Christmas films or recommendations. Yeah.
But I did find one film during this exercise which I've fallen in love with. I'm saying no more
Okey-cokey.
Until next week. Right. Okay, then. Draw your brakes.
Forward and payaka. Manacle and then go saka. Yeah.
Scotty and Draw Your Brakes from the Harder They Come soundtrack. Okay, it's now film reviews, which I'll be handing all over to Denise, as she's been going to see every film apart from Wicked, which she's already seen that. And we're going to start with the new film from the Iranian director, Jafar Panahi. And this one, the Palme d'Or, didn't it?
Yeah, so it was just an accident. I am pleased to report, yes, the Palme d'Or jury got it right. It is my film of one of my films of the year. Mm-hmm. It's not the winner for nothing. It's a really great film. So really, it's plot-wise, we start off pre-credits. We're in a car with a man and a woman. The man's wife is very heavily pregnant. And then we see that there's a daughter and a very small child in the back singing along and playing, and they hit a dog. This upsets everybody in the car, except for the mother, who's quite pragmatic about it. And she's like, these things are sent to us for a reason. The daughter is very upset and the father is disturbed. They stop somewhere to try and fix the car, because the car then conks out on them. And this is all pre-credits. And a man sees and recognises the false leg, the squeak of the false leg of the driver of the car. And he thinks he recognises him as his torturer from prison. What follows is just such an interesting balance of, it goes from the absurd to the grotesque. There's a delicate humour throughout it, that because the guy that's recognised him, he hasn't had his humanity taken over, but he wants revenge. So it's a revenge. He kidnaps the guy, takes him to the middle of nowhere, tries to bury him alive. But something that he says gives him cause to doubt. And he doesn't want to kill somebody incorrectly. So he goes on this madcap, absurd, hilarious at times, journey of trying to get verification that he's okay to kill this guy, basically. And the people that he meets go on this journey with him. One of them is a bride dressed for her wedding photos, because they take the photos the day before the wedding. Her groom, there's a photographer who has also been a prisoner, because he has sent her away as someone that he doesn't know to try and verify. But all of them in some way feel that this man has ruined their life and they want revenge. But then they don't know what that revenge would look like. And then their humanity hasn't been taken so far from them that they would actually go through with it. And I think the director, I think Jafar Panahi said that, because he's been in prison himself, obviously, and he's talked to people, and this is a lot based on their experiences as well. I won't spoil it any further by saying what happens or anything. It's just, considering it's shot on the sly as well, it's beautifully filmed.
Well, he's been making these films, his films he's been making, almost in guerrilla style. I mean, one of his films he shot in his apartment using an iPhone, and they smuggled the film out to the West so it could be shown at festivals on a memory stick, which, legend has it, someone had to insert in a certain part of their anatomy to get it through customs.
It's just so accomplished, and it's so... I won't talk about the ending, but I love the ending. The van becomes almost a character in itself, and it kind of reminded me of a Michael Haneke film at times in its sort of construction and performance. It's for what the themes that it's talking about, and the obvious rage of the director at the absurdity of the corruption, and you know, there's a running gags in it about him getting bribed wherever he goes. But it's so balanced with a sort of humour and humanity that you would think, oh, this sounds a bit heavy, and I'm not sure I want to watch that. It's not delivered in a heavy way at all, but it is really respectful, and it's just such a good film.
I don't say these films are due to the circumstances he has to work under, they're minimalist. They're sometimes beyond minimalist. And I'm quite looking forward to seeing this, that he's actually got out a bit with this one as well, albeit still it's not, you know, a $200 million. So I'm really looking forward to
this. A really good cast as well. I mean, I don't know any of the actors, but Vahid Mobasseri plays Vahid, who is the sort of the driving force. But it kind of switches, because you think you're with this family, and then it switches to him, really. And Mariam Ashafri plays Shiva, who is another strong female character in it. But I can't recommend it highly enough. Get to the pictures.
That's a full-on rate then. That's getting from
absolutely,
us.
Yeah.
We're getting some good films at the end of the year at last, aren't we?
Yeah.
So what else you got for us?
Well, I'll just touch on these briefly, because we haven't got much time left, and they are a week old. But if you haven't caught Blue Moon yet, which is a Richard Linklater film that we mentioned the other week, worth your attention. It's a little bit niche, I'll be honest, because it's all set in one night. Apart from the beginning of the film, it opens and we learn about how Lawrence Hart died, who's played by Ethan Hawke, who was a songwriter known for, obviously, Blue Moon, which is mentioned a lot in the film as, oh, not that one. I did my Valentine, I did this. But he had awkward, difficult relationship with alcohol, and that led to his writing partner moving towards Oscar Hammerstein, and that we're at the opening night of Oklahoma for this film. It's witty, it's funny. Lawrence Hart will, Ethan Hawke as Lawrence Hart. I mentioned last week, I think, when I was talking about it, that Lawrence Hart is 5 foot. Ethan Hawke is 5'9". They do a lot of jiggery pokery to make Ethan Hawke look 5 foot, which at the time, sometimes I find that a bit distracting. Just cast a shorter actor. But
and Margaret Qualley is in it, isn't
she?
She's about 6 foot tall, isn't she?
She plays...
In heels, certainly.
Yeah, and she plays a kind of object of desire, but Lawrence Hart is quite clearly gay as well.
Yeah.
But he is obsessed by this young woman, and she ends up in the path of his ex-partner. It's just a really interesting film to watch. It's a nice story, and it really is centred on Ethan Hawke's performance. But like I say, a bit niche. Lots of theatre references in there, though, for people.
Oh, you would have
called
them,
like me,
and what are we finishing off with, then?
Well, I don't know if I've got time to talk about it, really, and do it
justice. Make it quick.
But Pillion, that's still out, and that I caught that this week. It's the sort of... So it's... submissive dominant relationship in the gay world. It's the debut film from a filmmaker called... it stars Harry Melling. He's the timid guy. You've got Alexander Skarsgård as the enigmatic biker. And he... Well, I would say he takes Harry Melling under his wing. He just sort of... grabs him. Yeah. There's a sex act in an alleyway on Christmas Day. So it's a Christmas film. It's a Christmas film. But it does an interesting thing. It has the supporting parts for Leslie Sharp and Douglas Hodges, his parents, who are so sweet because they're such accomplished actors. They don't get much to say, but they say everything that you need. And they don't really understand why their sweet, lovely son is falling into this submissive relationship. And, you know, he is like being abused. There's a very lovely scene at the dinner table where Leslie Sharp, who, by the way, is dying. Let's stop killing off all our female actresses for Christmas. she just wants her son to have a nice, happy relationship. It is highly worth watching, and I didn't realise Jake Shears was in it. He plays another submissive boyfriend. They're basically a bunch of bikers, and it's a world that you don't want to know too much about, I suspect. But it is quite tastefully done, and it is worth a watch.
There you go. Mm. BDSM in the home counties.
Yeah.
Right then. Some more music?
I think so.
Well, that wasn't a bad trawl of films you had there for the week, was it?
They were really good. I mean, honestly, both films are really good, but It Was Just an Accident was so good.
Yeah.
You know.
Right then. More from The Hard Way Come. And this is Mr. Desmond Dekker with 007 Shantytown. Desmond Dekker and 007 Shantytown. Right, what's happening next week then? Not much. Well, there is for me.
I'm quite intrigued by it. So my double bill on Friday is going to be two renowned actresses in their directorial debuts. I've got a double bill of that. So I'm going to see Goodbye June, which we mentioned in Trailer Trash a few weeks ago.
Warned you about in Trailer Trash.
Kate Winslet, a Christmas film. Where they're killing off Grandma. Grandma is Helen Mirren. But also Eleanor the Great, which is directed by Scarlett Johansson. And that features June Squibb. Now, did you ever see that film that I told you to go and see with her in it?
No.
Oh, man.
I didn't do it out of spite or petty malice.
I really feel like you'd love it. You'd absolutely love it. So I'm really intrigued by that. Thelma is the film, by the way, that I want you to see.
No,
so,
I do remember you.
Yeah. That's out Friday. What else have we got?
Oh, another remake of a 70s horror movie, Silent Night, Deadly Night, a Christmas film, that'll be. And you will have forgotten it by Boxing Day.
You hope.
It's going to be like all of these horror movie remakes, you can't even remember that they were even made.
And what about Ella McKay?
I've got nothing about that. I just saw that it was coming out this week.
I feel sure that I've seen a trailer for this. It is old Jamie Lee Curtis.
Yes. And the other actress in it, her name was like Ella McKay. But she wasn't an actress I was familiar with.
Emma Mackey.
Emma Mackey.
Oh, you know Emma Mackey. Yeah, it's a political drama, but it's by the guy that did Broadcast News, isn't it? Like, really...
Oh, James L. Brooks, yeah. Yes, he was, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So that's...
Listen, you've got to remember, by yesterday afternoon, I was in no fit state to even put this together.
It looks like it might be interesting.
It might be. If I have to drag myself to a cinema next week...
That'll be the one. It doesn't look Christmassy, if that helps.
Yeah.
I'll take the Christmas bullet. But we are going to have like a lot of Christmas chat next week as well.
And we'll start playing Christmas music next week as well.
Well, I thought we were going to look at maybe some scores of the year, or should we do that in the new year?
I had a look at that this week. I couldn't see anything. I thought, if you want to do that, you wait till the next time I'm off. That's
all right
it,
then.
It defeated me. All, I can
all
say.
Right then. I'll do my right Sinners then. Stuff. Come the
Again.
Oscars. Sinners, I got my Spotify Wrapped this week, and Sinners.
Yeah, exactly. We've been there, done that. Right. Have a great week, all of you. Soon be Christmas, it says here.
Enjoy your Netflix trash.
Yeah. And enjoy your films, not Christmas ones.